This podcast brought to you by Peterson Auto Group. With 5 stores and 10 brands and more than 1,800 new and used vehicles to choose from, Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car.
This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and talk about the upcoming schedule. Now here's David Allen, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
839, 670 KBOI, joining us in the next title studio. By us, I mean me, Chris, Todd. It's Bob Beeler, the voice of the Broncos. How are you this morning?
Good this morning. Kind of seems weird. It seems like such a long time ago since we've had a game when it was played on a Thursday night.
I was thinking that this morning. We're 4 days removed from the last game and 4 days still till the next game. Yeah. So we're kind of right smack dab in the middle.
And the thing that playing on a Thursday night or a Friday night is the case this week, Bears, you can watch other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the teams in the Mountain West, watched a lot of football on Saturday. San Diego State looks really good. They run the ball extremely well. They pass it just enough, and their defense looks good. They won for the second straight week, and for the conference's point of view, thank goodness they're out there because
yes.
The conference is 2-10 against the Power 5 the last 2 weeks. San Diego State has both of the wins. Air Force, to me, now I know Michigan's offense is so-so, but Air Force hung in there with Michigan. I thought they looked better than I thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
Wyoming, Utah State, Nevada losing to an FCS team.
Oof.
I mean, there are some teams that you kind of have to rethink your position of. I think Air Force might be a tougher game than expected. Wyoming might be an easier game to be expected.
San Diego State's
going to
be.
San Diego State.
But here's the thing. The two teams that have moved to the front for the group of five are San Diego State with two Power 5 wins and mm-hmm. Memphis for their win mm-hmm. over UCLA. But remember, to get the New Year's Six Bowl, you have to win the league.
Yes.
Boise State will have at least one and maybe two chances at San Diego State. They'll play in the regular season, and then they could have to see them mm-hmm. again in the championship game. So a lot of birdies left on the table for Boise State, and what you see around the Mountain Division, Colorado State, I thought, looked okay against Alabama as much as you can look okay, but it'll be interesting.
To go back to Thursday night, I thought, again, the defense
unbelievable.
Played really well and has been the bright, shining spot for Boise State this year.
Well, and you look at it, the defense gave up two touchdowns in the game. One of them was against backups with a minute to go when the game was, 28-7 at that point. So the defense now in three regulations, we're not counting overtime,
no,
has given up four touchdowns total in three games. And the offense has given up three defensive touchdowns yeah. to the other team. So the defense has been outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leighton Vander Esch with 13 tackles. DeAndre Pierce, Tyson Maeva, both with more than 10 tackles. So there's three guys that had over 10 tackles each. Coach Harsin, after the game, talked about the performance of his defense that has really been carrying this team.
We won the turnover battle, which is key. We won the field position battle, which is key. And then we were able to take advantage of those on the offensive side. And, that's the sign, right there. When you're able to do that, good things are happening. You're executing. Your team is playing together, all three phases. And that was something that I told the guys at the end of the game, very proud of them. All three phases came together. They were on the sideline. They were working for each other regardless. And it was just a matter of time. You could feel it that something was going to happen. And those turnovers that were created, Leighton got both of them. Gabe Perez was out there, was a part of one that helped get the tip ball. And those were huge. And, one key I thought in the game was Leighton's punch there when he got the ball out. And, that had happened in New Mexico the previous game. And kind of set the tone for that game as well. And so right there, I think our guys were fired up and obviously a huge play.
I thought you had a great point. It's not often, and you said it on the broadcast, not often that you get three guys that have 10 tackles plus.
Right.
And those guys were flying all over the field against
New
Mexico.
And sometimes you might get it if the other team's offense is on the field all day going
sure.
up and down the field because with every play there has to be a touchdown, but that was not the case. Turnovers, two more as he mentioned. Now that gives them 8 for the season. They had 9 in 13 games last year. And Coach Harsin went on to rave about some of the individual performances and what the defense has been able to do that has allowed them to be good.
Are those guys that they've been in position, they put themselves pre-snap wise to know, some of the keys that they're looking at. And I think they're just playing fast. And to me, that's what the sign of a good defense is. And I'm really proud of those guys. And they're doing the right things. They're in the right positions. But they prepare themselves throughout the week. And it shows up on game day.
And they're doing it with not just number ones on the field all the time.
No. And it's a very young group. Uelua is a backup defensive tackle as a senior. Hartsfield's a backup safety as a senior. And Gabe Perez plays some. Obviously, injury has limited his playing time as a senior. Everybody else is going to be back next year. This defense should be even better next season.
And he touched on it on the first cut we played. I thought the punter was really good. Well, obviously, the 63-yard punt is the one that stands out. But I thought all game he was really good.
When you look at the offense, they had four touchdowns. Three times the offense scored on drives of less than 50 yards, so they were taking advantage of the mistakes. But the one in the fourth quarter, Velasquez gets a 63-yard punt. They knock down at the one. They hold him with a three and out, so now New Mexico's punting out of their own end zone. And then Williams, Avery Williams, runs it back, 33 yards, sets Boise State up at the 17. Offense only had to move 17 yards for a touchdown. That score was set up by special teams. So defense and special teams have been getting A's every week.
When we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about the offense. It's 844. You're listening to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
David, Chris, and Bob Beeler here with you. The Boise State Broncos play Friday night. Our pregame coverage starts at 1 o'clock here on 670 KBOI. It's another beautiful 6 o'clock kickoff, which is always a good thing. Coming off the New Mexico win, the offense put up 28.
Decent.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think we're going to see, at least if the team moves along like it's moving along, winning games, but not winning games with 40 points. But the defense is going to allow you to win games because they're not going to allow more than 20.
Yes, exactly.
So if you can cobble together 24, 28 points, not to say that you don't want to score 40, but it's a different style of game.
Exactly.
You know? So Coach Harsin, after the game, was not happy with his team's running attack and thinks it needs to get better.
We need to run the ball better. We didn't do that. And that's the bottom line. We were very poor on our short yardage and third down. And, you know, Montel, I thought, did a great job. He was 8-9 at halftime passing. He scored the first touchdown of the game running the ball. We got to run the ball better. And that's the bottom line. You got to run the ball. You got to run the ball in critical situations. You got to be able to run the ball in short yardage. And we just haven't done that at all, period.
It's not a good sign when Cozart is the leading rusher for the team.
And people keep saying, well, why can he run it and some of the other guys can't? Well, a lot of times he's running it in broken situations, in misdirection, in where, you know, it's not where you know it's coming, where you hand off, you're going to go off tackle, and you're expecting to block it.
Yep.
So why have they not run the ball? It's never one thing. It's the line hasn't done that well. Maybe they're not getting help from the receivers blocking. The running backs maybe aren't as good as what Jeremy McNichols. It's all across the board. And for this team to become what it wants to be, they're going to have to improve in the running game. They have to improve in the passing game as well. I mean, Wilson was the leading receiver. He only caught three passes. Jake Rowe was the big weapon as the tight end. He had two touchdowns, and then he also ran one in as a Wildcat. If you heard my highlight, I kind of pause a second, because if you're asking me to guess who might be taking a snap at a Wildcat position, Jake Rowe would not have been high on my list.
You might have mentioned my name before you mentioned Jake Rowe.
Yeah, there's a possibility. He did a nice job, and as Jake mentioned in our post game, it was blocked well.
Yes.
I mean, it was blocked well.
Yep.
And when he needed 6 yards, not that he needed, 25 to get in, but you'll take a 6 yard gain any day of the week.
Yep. Like you say, it's a combination. The line's not blocking well, and maybe Madison and Wolpin aren't hitting the holes when they're supposed to and asking the line to hold. The coaches know.
Yeah.
The coaches are looking at all the tape, and they're going, here's the problem, and they're going to fix it.
Well, they're going to, exactly. They're going to make an effort. They're going to do things, and then if not, then sometimes they move people around and decide, okay, we're going to go with this, or we're going to try that. But, it's a work in progress. And I remember last year, some games the offense was better, some games the defense was better. Todd's complaining that the Packers looked great week one, looked poor week two. What happens one week doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen the next week, either for or against.
We obviously won't know about Rippon until later in the week, even maybe Friday during the game. But I think what it's shown us the last two games is that Cozart is a capable backup and also a capable starter when he needs to be.
Right.
He's not going to be Rippon. He's not asked to be Rippon. He's asked to maybe not do a shovel pass and make a mistake. A lot of backups are asked to not win. You don't have to win the game. Just don't lose the game.
But I think the thing that the coaches have been smart at, you ran what? Cozart ran the ball 9 times. You're not going to run Rippon nine times.
Not.
He had the one nice run against Washington State. So you have to look at whatever your personnel is and decide the way to put it in the best possible situation. And you're going to do things differently with Cohart, whether he's in there for some series or the whole game, than you are with Rippon.
Exactly. Let's talk about Virginia when we come back. It's 8:51. You're listening to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
David, Chris, and Bob here with you on Bronco Monday. Friday night, 6 o'clock kickoff, 1 o'clock pregame here on 670 KBOI. Virginia comes to town. It's a team that beat William & Mary, lost to Indiana, and beat UConn this week. So Bronco probably has a little bit of an up-and-down team right now.
But last year they won two games and weren't that good. And then 2 years ago when Boise State played them, before Mendenhall took over, they were really bad. And
really
Boise State
bad.
Won 56-14, causing Mike London to be fired at the end of the game. Yeah. Watching them, I don't think UConn is overly good. I watched the whole game. But Virginia is better.
Yeah.
Their quarterback is a second-year starter, set a school record in passing. His name is Kirk Benkert. They've got a kind of a Shane Williams Rhodes kind of guy that takes it on some fly sweeps that I thought was really good. Olamide Zaccheaus. And then I gotta like a couple of their defensive players. A middle linebacker, Micah Kaiser, I think is one of the best linebackers. If he and Vander Esch are both on their game, you're going to see a lot of tackles racked up by the linebackers. First time an ACC team has come to Boise to play a regular season football game. They've come a couple times for bowl games, but this will be the first time for that. I think this can be a good win. I think it's going to be a harder game than I thought at the beginning of the season. I thought this was going to be easy. But I think they're going to win five or six games, and I think they're going to knock somebody off in the ACC that's pretty good. So I think this win, if you get them in a Power 5, is going to end up being a better win than originally thought of.
And talking about quarterbacks who, you know, are playing good and got a lot of pub, we played somebody in Troy who had a lot of that, and he didn't do too much in the game. So maybe the same thing can happen this week.
You never know.
I don't want to spend.
And the defense has been good, and Luke Falk didn't do that well either.
Yeah.
So I think Boise State's defense has done a nice job taking away of whatever the other team has presented.
I don't want to spend a boatload of time on this. We'll wrap up on this. Your mom always said, when you're grown up, nothing good ever happens after midnight.
And that's true.
And it's very true. And David Moe had an incident Saturday morning at about 2:30 in the morning where he and a guy outside a club on 6th Street were pushing each other and looked like they wanted to fight. No punches had been thrown or anything, and he was arrested on misdemeanor charges. It's all going to be handled internally.
Disturbing the peace.
I think the worst thing about being a coach is you get those calls sometimes at 10 or midnight or whatever time, and it's tough. It's college kids, and unfortunately, isn't always the call you want to get.
Exactly, and you have to wonder if maybe he sits out the first series, or maybe sits out the first quarter.
I don't know.
Or maybe doesn't do anything, and the coach won't talk about it because he's going to handle it internally.
I'm sure that they'll ask today at the press conference at 11:30, and I don't know what kind of an answer you get. My guess is the answer will be, we're going to handle it internally. But
And I would guess that David's going to come out and apologize, because I'm sure he's mortified and feels bad.
David's
about
one of my favorite kids on the team.
He's a good kid.
Really like
David.
Really like. And the other guy may be a great guy, too.
Yes. And so you just get two 20-year-olds, and it's 2:30 in the morning, and a lot of 2:30 punches, you know, muscles start showing up.
Of course, down there at 6th and Main, you know, on a weekend night, what peace are you disturbing?
That's true. Who's trying to sleep at 6th and Main? Bob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Good luck Friday night.
Thanks.
6 o'clock again, kickoff, 1 o'clock pregame here on 670 KBOI. Chris and I will be back after the top of the hour news. I want to talk about hazing in this country and find out your thoughts on it. You're listening to 670 KBOI.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show, 906. Thanks to Bob Bieler for coming in for Bronco Monday. Bronco Tuesday will be here tomorrow with, I believe, maybe golf. Bob Bieler, you, and Paul J. Schneider.
Sports, definitely.
Definitely sports, yes. I want to do that upfront thing here, is that I never belonged to a fraternity in college. Mm-hmm. I knew people who were. I went to fraternity parties. I knew people who were there. I played at fraternity parties in bands that I was in all through college. So I've kind of been around that lifestyle without being part of that lifestyle. I will also tell you that while my father was in the military, I was not in the military. So that kind of hazing breakdown that the military does in boot camp, I was never part of.
Are you saying you're not a joiner?
I'm just saying I've never been hazed. Let me say that.
Okay.
And so I don't get it. Police at LSU are investigating whether a fraternity hazing led to the death of a freshman student, according to university officials. Maxwell Gruver, G-R-U-V-E-R,
probably Gruver.
Yeah, Phi Delta Theta fraternity pledge, died Thursday. LSU president F. King Alexander reiterated that while the 18-year-old's death is being investigated as a potential hazing incident, many details of what occurred before his death are still unknown. All Greek activities at the university were suspended indefinitely, pending the result of a thorough investigation. A preliminary autopsy report found that Gruver had a highly elevated blood alcohol level, plus the presence of THC in his urine. THC is obviously a chemical found in marijuana.
Okay.
No cause of death was released. More detailed toxicology analysis is to come, so the autopsy could take 4 weeks to complete. Here's what officials know. A fellow fraternity member took him to Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center's emergency department Thursday, where he was pronounced dead shortly before noon. The fraternity contacted LSU's Greek Life office about 12:15 to inform them of an incident. That office then notified the university's police, which began investigating. The chapter has been suspended by LSU and by the fraternity's national office, which also has opened an investigation into the incident. The house, the Phi Delta Theta house, is owned by the fraternity's chapter, but it is considered on-campus housing by the university. A house mom lives in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It is unknown whether the house mom was in the fraternity house the night before or on the morning of his death. The fraternity did not have any registered or scheduled events with the school on September 13th, the night before he died. LSU has a fall rush period where students can try to join a frat. The fall rush period has ended, and students who reached invitations or bids to join fraternities are now in the pledging process to become a member. 23% of LSU student bodies in the Greek organization. So,
apart from that, we have no idea what happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he fell down the stairs. I don't know if it was like the Penn State situation where he just had so much alcohol. I just don't know. But then I Googled how many hazing deaths per year. And you can trust or not trust Wikipedia. There has been at least one hazing death each year from 1969 to 2017. At least one.
Somewhere in the nation.
Somewhere in the United States of America.
Oh,
not in the world, but somewhere in the United States of America, there has been at least one hazing death each year from 69 to 2017.
Well, and I think, to be fair, most colleges and most Greek organizations long ago banned hazing. Now, it may still happen. You know, in the same way that, what was the movie, You Can't Handle the Truth. Anyway, you know, where he said there's no such thing as a code red, but they all knew there was.
Yes.
Yeah. Like that. Where you weren't supposed to do it, and everybody said, anyway. So that it could be a situation like that.
Sure. There are six states without an anti-hazing law is all. Alaska, Hawaii, Montana, New Mexico, South Dakota, and Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
All other 44 have anti-hazing laws. But we obviously know that hazing still takes place because Louisiana is one of those states that has an anti-hazing law.
Right.
And if this young man died because of a hazing incident,
then somebody's
in big trouble.
Somebody's
obviously.
Probably in big trouble anyway.
And the school might be in big trouble and the fraternity itself might be in big trouble. My question for everyone is, and did you belong to a frat?
I did not. I was going to pledge one for a while, and I was in it for a couple of weeks and didn't really enjoy it.
Okay.
It wasn't, most of what they were doing wasn't really my cup of tea, so to speak. And believe me, that's not what they were drinking.
They were not drinking cup of tea. Okay.
So I just kind of told them goodbye and quietly faded away. So
I my question is I don't understand hazing. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you do that. I don't understand why you strip
hazing,
them down to their underwear and make them roll around in the snow.
I think hazing is something that some people consider to be fun in the same way that, any kind of an initiation is considered to be fun by the people who don't have to go through it. But especially if people have gone through it and then they want to put the new people through it. It's one thing, to go wake somebody up at 5 o'clock in the morning and take them out for a picnic in their pajamas or something. It's a completely different thing to put someone into some sort of physical harm.
Exactly.
Or to make them, drink an entire bottle of scotch or something.
208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264, #670 on your Verizon Wireless. If you belong to a fraternity and had to go through hazing or participate in it, I'd like someone to explain to me what it's all about and why it would be something that people would participate in.
Or anything. I know they do it in Major League Baseball and in the NFL as well.
And it makes no sense to me there either.
And I don't know how harsh it is. I know that they quite frequently make people dress up in costume and things and make complete trips to different cities and get off the plane, dressed in weird costumes, usually rookies.
Yeah. Now, that hazing, that's nothing if you have to dress like the characters from Wizard of Oz.
But like you say, dressing up as somebody is a lot different than
like you say, having to drink 47 shots in 2 hours. 913, you're listening to 670 KBOI. 919 at 670 KBOI. KBOI rewards code is hazing. H-A-Z-I-N-G. Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword hazing, and get your 5,000 rewards points.
Dave sent in an instant message.
Okay.
And, I don't know, a lot of people have this same kind of attitude that basically if there's something we've done for years and years and years, why change it? and they think that, people are not as tough as they used to be or something of that nature. And I don't necessarily agree with that simply because if something is resulting in deaths, perhaps it ought not go on. But anyway, Dave says, hey, I know let's get rid of fraternities and all the other American traditions that offend or hurt people. Maybe we could all go through life wrapped in bubble wrap with our mouths taped shut so as not to offend anybody. Now, I'm thinking if you had your mouth taped shut, that might even lead to a problem as well. But I know I'm just being facetious about that, but tradition doesn't necessarily mean something is good.
We had a tradition of lynching for years and years, but we kind of got rid of that.
Kind of.
Adrian Heidemann would disagree with you. After consuming beer and blackberry brandy as part of his initiation ritual, Heidemann became intoxicated and was moved to a back room while the rest of the chapter watched strippers who had been hired for the event. When his fraternity brothers checked on him at 1 a.m. the next morning, they found him unresponsive. He had aspirated his vomit and asphyxiated as a result of severe alcohol intoxication.
Mm-hmm. I think there are, I'm going to say just people in general, but I think a lot of college kids, they for some reason have no idea that excessive drinking can kill you.
Well, and I've got a couple, after a night of drinking, Chad Meredith was told to swim across Lake Osceola, but struggled due to his intoxication. He drowned 34 feet from shore.
Wow.
This is Daniel Reardon, died of alcohol poisoning following a hazing ritual. He was comatose for 1 week before life support was removed. This one here is Kristen High and Kenneth Safir. According to a lawsuit filed by the family on the night they died, they spent several hours at the beach doing calisthenics before being ordered to walk backward into the ocean. Kenitha, who couldn't swim, was hit by a wave and knocked over. Kristen attempted to rescue her. Both girls drowned. Lawsuit filed by the girls' families alleged that the women had been blindfolded, had their arms tied, and were wearing clothes and shoes when they entered the water.
So they were in the ocean,
yes,
blindfolded,
fully
with
clothed,
their arms tied.
Yeah. Walter Dean Jennings, March 12th of 2003, was pledging Psi Epsilon Chi when he was forced to drink numerous pitchers.
Chi,
yeah.
Yeah, Chi.
When he was forced to drink numerous pitchers of water through a funnel, so it wasn't even alcohol. His brain swelled and he died as a result of water intoxication.
You remember that radio contest, I think, that was held somewhere in California,
yes,
years ago, where it was one of those things where the people were supposed to drink as much water as they could,
yep,
without taking a bathroom break.
Yep.
And then the last person, who didn't stop and go to the bathroom would end up winning the contest. And one woman just died because she had apparently drunk too much water without going to the bathroom.
Yep. Matthew Carrington in 2005 was forced to drink large amounts of water and do calisthenics in a basement flooded with raw sewage and fans blowing on him. He died from water intoxication.
Good grief.
This kid died after being tackled in a ritual football game that pitted the 10-member pledge group against approximately 40 active members and alumni. The game lasted for more than 3 hours and was played without the use of pads.
Or probably refs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Starks died of alcohol poisoning after drinking heavily.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of this has to do with, besides at a lot of large colleges and universities where they have a large, you know, student body that lives on campus. You know, when I went to Boise State, I mean, we had probably, what, 17,000 students at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a very small number at that time actually lived on campus. But a lot of these, you know, ones, say, like the University of Alabama, University of Michigan, or something like
sure.
that, not only do they have a Greek system, but there are other what they call underground fraternities.
Yes.
Where they're not actually affiliated with the college. They're not actually affiliated with any of the other fraternities or sororities. They just kind of do their own thing. And a lot of those have, you know, very bad hazing rituals.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Let's go to the phones. 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. Let's go out to Brad and Eagle. Brad, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you today?
I'm well, gentlemen. I'm sorry. I'm going to argue with the forced comment. These people chose to pledge the fraternities, and at any point in the process, they can say no. I pledged. I was subjected to stuff that I thought was absurd, and I walked. It wasn't that. It's something where I wasn't going to put my life at risk to join a fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to personal choice and personal responsibility?
I'm not going to completely disagree with you, but I guess my whole question is why do it in the first place? Why is hazing a thing? I don't understand.
See, hazing's a thing in that you're joining a larger brotherhood, or in sorority cases, sisterhood, and fraternity membership. It's business connections. It's something where you can use your fraternity memberships to get you into boardrooms, to get you into the door and more corporations throughout the country than we care to admit.
But what I'm saying is why does rolling around maybe in your underwear trying to chase a pig help you get into that? It's the fraternity pin that gets you in, not the fact that you initiated, right? Or were hazed.
It's tradition. It's stupid.
People tend to bond when they've gone through something horrible together.
Bingo.
But if you're all members of the same fraternity, isn't that your bonding agent?
You bonded through the hazing process.
But I don't.
Well, and again, it's an old as most.
Thanks
tradition,
for the call, Brad. I appreciate
as,
it.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. As most traditions are, it's an old thing. And there was a time when cruelty was a little less frowned upon than it is now.
And like I say, I'm not really disagreeing with Brad so much. James and Boise, hang on. We got to go to a news break. I'm just saying I just don't get it. It's one of those that I don't understand. To me, going to the fraternity and being there for 4 years, that's your bonding agent, not trying to chase a greased up pig in your underwear. That doesn't seem like it would be a bonding thing to me. I don't know. 9:26, news is next. You're listening to 670 KBOI.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. David and Chris here with you. We're discussing hazing. As promised, let's go to the phones. James in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you?
I'm all right. I just had a comment on it. I know it's different than college hazing. I was military.
Okay.
You know, you're the new guy. I mean, I had to carry something cherry in my pocket. I had cherry chapstick or cherry powder. You know, you have that bond developed, but they want to kind of feel you out. They want to get to know you. You get to do a lot of the, you know, grunt work that a lot of people don't want to do. But that's how it is in the beginning. And then, you know, you come up, and it's still a matter of bonding and welcoming. You know, they don't hate you. They're just trying to get to know you and see how you handle pressure, handle things, especially if you're going to go into combat situations. And when we would get haze for things, you know, we had to do push-ups or sit-ups or stuff like that. We weren't doing alcohol challenges or other things. I know there's times when we get together after work and, you know, drink, that kind of thing, but you're in a group and there's designated driver and these kind of things. It's safer than college. So, I mean, I'm pro, I guess, controlled or, you know, hazing mm-hmm. to extent for bonding, but I disagree. You know, it is your choice. It's a college stuff. You want to say no if you don't like what you're doing, you think it's, you know, unsafe, you know. Another peer pressure, but I still think you'd say, no, it's your choice. It was my choice to join the military and kind of knew what I was being subjected to. But I could also, you know, we got things over on them. They told us to go get stuff that we knew didn't exist. You know, we went back to our room, you know, and then they got in trouble for, not in trouble, but the people over them, like, you know, they got the better of you because they realized you're telling them wasn't true.
And James,
that kind of thing.
James, the thing is, yeah. I'll agree with you. If all you have to do is, you know, lug everybody's duffel bag or, like you say, carry cherry chapstick with you because you're the new guy because you're the cherry. There's nothing wrong with that.
Plus, in the service, you're going to have a lot of physical challenges. Anyway.
Yeah. But right. but if you're having to drink, you know, a liter of vodka in an hour, that seems ridiculous to me. Yeah. I don't know where that's a bonding thing.
I agree with what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, if they were doing things that were, you know, had to do, you know, more the physical things or prove their, you know, worth that way. No, jocks guys tend to work out a bit more, but, you know, something different. I mean, I don't like that kind of hazing, but I understand where it comes in for the bonding thing, but I disagree with the methods that the college kids are using.
I agree with you, James. Thanks for holding on and calling in, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for
the update. And I think you guys just basically mean really dangerous things.
Yeah. I guess I just don't want a situation where there's been at least one hazing death every year since 1969.
Billy of Boise, he says, and apparently he's not on your
side
here. He says, is David against everything he does not understand? Maybe instead of degrading an American tradition, he should take some time to learn about it first. To me, it's offensive to myself and my fraternity brothers. Okay, well. And the thing is, there's a difference between a tradition and a certain amount of, you know, silly things that you have to do. There's a difference between doing something silly and doing something that is dangerous to the point that it could kill you.
And I know it's been a long time since I was in college. I get that. But I will tell you that like I said in the beginning, I had fraternity friends. Mm-hmm. I went to fraternity parties. I played at fraternity parties. So I understand the fraternity life, even though I wasn't a part of it. I don't understand the hazing that you have to go through to get into that fraternity life. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Now, a different James than we just talked to, James at Garden City, says, I was in a fraternity. It was a very positive experience, and my fraternity brothers are still among my best friends. Hazing is a very broad term. The instances we hear about on the news are not representative of a normal fraternity experience. Those examples are terrible, but that does have to be what it is like. Hazing could be writing a satirical song, doing a scavenger hunt, or cleaning the pots and pans. Alcohol was never part of my pledging experience. A well-designed pledge program creates an instant and strong bonding effect. You are right, living together for 3 years does strengthen the bonds, as well as your time as alumni. But pledging tradition creates a common experience across years/age and builds strong ties among a class so they will make a good living group. I imagine boot camp before heading with your Army unit is similar. Does that help you understand? And it's like you, I don't, and again, I don't think it's that you didn't understand. I think you wonder why would somebody put somebody through something that could, you know, cause them, well, that could result in death. Let's put it that way.
So let me clear it up.
But let's put it this way. The ones that are actually sanctioned by most fraternities, you know, the events and things, are not dangerous.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to clear up.
At the worst, they might be embarrassing. And yes, group embarrassment does bond you as well.
Yeah, I'm using hazing in a very broad term, so I apologize.
Okay.
Because I've obviously made people angry, and I don't want to do that. Yes, if you had to dress up for the Friday night party, you all had to dress up like women to go to the fraternity party. There's no issue with that. I don't care about that at all. I'm talking about the ones that cause death, the situations that cause death.
Well, yeah, the ones that are that involve excessive drinking.
Excessive drinking
like
of water
that.
Or alcohol.
Or being submerged or something like that.
Calisthenics for 8 hours straight or stuff like that. That's the kind of hazing I'm talking about. And I'm just using hazing because that's the phrase to use. But I'm talking about deadly hazing is what I don't understand. The other bonding stuff, I get that because, you know, when you're in a musical group and somebody new comes in to play bass, you're ripping that guy and treating him like crap all the time and making sure he earns his spot in the band. Just like when I joined as the drummer.
See, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. When I joined as the drummer, the bass player, the two guitarists were already there. It was all group. I was carrying all their crap into every show after I loaded all my drums in. Because that's just part of it to make sure that you're part of that group. So I get that
Plus, you didn't have a roadie.
Plus, I didn't have a roadie, exactly. What I'm saying is I don't understand why you're thinking, hey, you know what? Let's get him to drink this liter of vodka in the next hour and a half. Because that's going to make him a part of our Delta.
And again, that is something that you could actually file under kids being dumb. Yeah, and it doesn't mean that all kids are dumb. It just means that kids can do dumb things. And it might not occur to a kid if he's putting somebody through a hazing, you know, ritual of some sort. It might not occur to them that something could be very deadly.
In 2017, I just don't think you can use ignorance as an excuse anymore. I just don't. I mean, those 8 or 10 or 12 deaths I gave you.
You'd be surprised.
Were just in the 2000s.
Yeah.
That I was talking about earlier that died from water poisoning or alcohol poisoning. That was just 2000s. I hadn't even gotten into the 2010s or back into the 90s or 80s. And so it's a known event that drinking a lot of anything is very dangerous.
Well, it should be known.
Well, if it's not, then
quite often we find that, you know, even people
smart
who
to get into college.
Even people who frequently are on television sometimes don't know what to other people seems to be common knowledge.
You might be right. I might be way off base.
Not that I'm mentioning any names.
9:44 now. We will update you on what President Trump said to the UN this morning. You're listening to 670 KBOI. 9:48. David Allen, Chris Walton here with you. President Trump, this is from the USA Today, began his first United Nations trip today by calling on the international body to improve the way it does business and to have it pay more of the costs for joint projects like peacekeeping. Quote, in recent years, the UN has not reached its full potential because of bureaucracy and mismanagement, Trump told delegates from other countries, calling on the organization to invest, quote, more in people and less in bureaucracy. Trump, as everyone knows, is a longtime critic of the UN, also made references to his frequent campaign trail complaint that the United States bears an oversized share of the cost for UN activities. We must ensure that no one and no member state shoulders a disproportionate share of the burden, he said, and that's militarily or financially. The U.S. covers about 22% of the UN budget. Wait, what? I knew it was a lot. I had no idea the percentage. 22%?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking for about 4 minutes at his first UN event, Trump said he wants to change business as usual and see the organization develop unspecified metrics by which it can measure its management and efforts to promote peace and security. Chris, do you think the UN does what it's supposed to do? Or what it was set out to do?
Well, essentially what it's supposed to do is prevent war. Mm-hmm. That's what it was originally supposed to do.
Yes.
They put it together right after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So that rather than have, you know, world wars and things like that, that we could just talk everything over and agree with, you know, each other or whatever in the same way that maybe a parliament does or a Congress or something of that, you know, any kind of legislature.
How's that worked out so far?
Well, it's not a binding legislature. And there have been wars, and there have been wars where the United Nations was against, you know, a particular, usually somebody in terms of aggression, North Korea, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't tend to solve a lot. And yeah, the United States does pay a much higher percentage. We, in the United States, we do have a fairly large percentage of the money that exists in the world compared to some other countries. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because you're the rich guy in the group, you should have to pay, you know, more of the bill than everybody else. On the other hand, some people feel that way.
And I don't know that he wants it. Everybody pays 5% and then we're good. I think he's okay with the U.S. paying a little bit more, but I don't know that he wants it to be such an exorbitant amount more.
In other words, like, you know, we pay what we can afford. You pay what you can afford, too, as opposed to nothing.
If we took it down to 15%, think about how many millions of dollars that would save us a year from 22%.
Well, I imagine it would.
So some U.N. members, meanwhile, have expressed concern that Trump's preference for unilateral action could undermine the global trading system and mm-hmm. undercut the UN's efforts to promote peaceful resolutions of international disputes.
And see, there's kind of a it's kind of strange, although this is not at all surprising for Donald Trump. It's kind of strange for someone to go to the United Nations and to say that basically we're going to have to put America first. You know, and our needs go ahead of the needs of the rest of you, because that's not what the United Nations is about. However, I don't think it should be a surprise to anyone, because he campaigned on that.
Yes.
And a lot of people voted for him because of that, you know, saying let's fix our own problems before we try to fix everybody else's, or, you know, et cetera, take care of our own people, you know, before we, accept everybody from all over the place.
So yes.
That was what he campaigned on, and he has stuck to that. And so this should not really be a surprise to anyone. However, it's probably not in the direct spirit of the United Nations, but you know, whether it's necessary or not is completely up to him.
In preparing
because he's the one who's you know, going and making the speech and declaring what, at least, you know, whether it's the full nation's policy or not, it will be his policy.
In preparing for his week-long series of UN meetings, Trump's major objective is to rally global support for pressuring North Korea into giving up nuclear weapons.
And I think everybody in the world would probably be better off if they did.
Yes. Or at least stop threatening to use them against the U.S. and its allies in Asia. While Trump and his aides said they want to resolve the dispute diplomatically, I would support that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
If
that's possible, that's always the best thing to do.
They've also reserved the military option. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, Trump added to the tension by describing North Korean leader Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Now, how does that add to the tension?
Well,
the guy likes to shoot off rockets.
That's not called good diplomacy necessarily, but on the other hand, it's just Trump being Trump. You know, if he sees something that he thinks is stupid, he's going to call it stupid, and you know, he's not going to check with several people and say, should I call this stupid?
Yeah. Gary Cohn, director of the National Economic Council, attended an energy breakfast with UN counterparts. During the meeting, the White House said Cohn repeated statements by other aides that the U.S. will maintain plans to withdraw from the Paris Climate Change Agreement unless it can negotiate more favorable terms. That came out over the weekend, too, that given more favorable terms, Trump might stay in that climate change agreement. But again, I think he's going to put the U.S. first. And as you said, many people in this country love that because it seems like for so many years, the United States was second or third in many instances, not in all instances. I understand that. But in many instances, it always seemed the U.S. was taking a back burner to other things.
Right.
And we have enough issues here that we shouldn't need to worry about issues over there just yet. You can pay attention to them. I'm not saying ignore them. I don't want to be an isolationist.
When people argue about these sort of things, they tend to argue in extremes, you know, like the Ayn Rand thing, which is that basically I'm here to take care of myself, and that's my only responsibility. And if you all took care of yourselves, then we'd all be just fine.
Yeah.
Well, and that's terrific if it works out that way.
Yes.
On the other hand, that's an extreme, and we don't necessarily all believe that. It's like I said when we first started this program back in 2001. People were saying, "Well, this isn't a socialist country," and I said, "Well, to a great extent, it actually is, because anytime you pool your money for the common good, it is somewhat of a socialist country, and so we do that. We have taxes and things like that. However, we have always voted for, or we've always hoped that at least we could keep some of what we make, a large percentage of it, so you know that working hard actually might benefit you in some way.
And like I said, I'm all for putting the U.S. first. Pay attention to what's going on in the world. See when Haiti and the Dominican Republic get hammered with a hurricane. Yeah. We'll send help down there. But not make everybody else the focus of what we do.
And again, the United Nations is supposed to do that. That's why they have UNESCO and UNICEF and all these different programs to help the people that need help when they need help. But again, you know, you can't have just a couple of countries funding everyone, I suppose.
Exactly. That's the show for today. Thanks for listening. Rush Limbaugh comes up after the news. Keep it right here on 670 KBOI.